welcome to For the Love of Nature, a podcast where we tell you everything you need to know about nature and probably more than you wanted to know. I'm Laura.
And I'm Katie. And today is another taxonomy one.
Woo!
I promise, as always, it'll be way more fun than what it sounds like.
Some people immediately just turned this episode off.
Yeah, just like skip. Be like, no, listen, stay and listen. We're talking about science and it's going to be cool, damn it. So we're going to be talking about that although they're considered primitive plants, mosses and ferns are anything but boring.
I do love me some mosses and ferns. I definitely have said on this podcast before that I belong to like a moss appreciation society on Facebook.
You do. Yeah. Like, and that's, yeah, she's not just, that's not like a, like figuratively. No, she literally is saying she is a part of a group.
I just look at pictures of moss covering things and it brings me joy.
I mean, at least it's, never mind. At least it's just joy.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about taxonomy. So just quick refresher for any new listeners who just decided to randomly listen to our mosses and ferns episode. All life can be categorized into 8 levels, each getting more and more specific. Domain, kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. Basically, taxonomy is complicated and it's always changing. So there is no cut and dry definition for what we're kind of going to talk about today, except for, so we're going to dive into the plant kingdom, okay? And try not to let it be dry, which is funny, because it says there is, it literally, when I was looking up, that there is no cut and dry definition for the plant kingdom.
Of course not. Of course not, though, because it has to be complicated.
Also, at the very highest level, like, you might think you know what a plant is, but actually there's no such thing as a plant, like,
There's no such thing as a plant.
There's no cut and dry definition of what a plant is because most have chlorophyll and other pigments, but not all of them. Most can photosynthesize, but not all of them. They can't move, although some of them have reproductive cells that can.
Yeah. I was like, don't tell me we all of a sudden found a walking plant. I was like, I would lose my stuff. What are the trees in Lord of the Rings that can move?
The Ents. Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be a little much. Although, you know, there's that thing called like the walking tree in like the tropics. I know there was one in Costa Rica, but I can't really walk.
It doesn't like, you know, get up and.
Yeah. Or even over time, it doesn't. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like go for an evening stroll, sunset walk.
At least we don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. But if we go all the way back to like the very first tree episode that we talked about, I'm telling you, we're saying right now that trees, there's no cut and dry definition. Within at least mine or my son's lifetime, they're going to reclassify plants as being way more alive than what we think they are.
Yeah, that's still to this day. That's my mother-in-law's favorite episode. Ugh. I was like, yeah, I was having an existential crisis during it.
Right? Everything we know is not true.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
Dang. But yeah, two last things that kind of make plants plants, but not all of them, have a cell wall composed of cellulose and don't need protein because they can get nitrogen in other ways. So anyway, we're going to dive into the plant kingdom and we're actually going to cover like several different phyla, which is the second level. But because botanists have to be complicated, they don't call them phyla, they call them divisions.
Like why? Why make it so difficult? Like, just keep it the same, folks. Keep it the same.
As Katie knows, I was having like a taxonomy crisis.
No, you were
researching like, this episode
because the number of messages is so
complicated. Well, I was like, okay, are they this? Are they this? Are they this? So in the past, what we're going to talk about, mosses and ferns, they used to be lumped into two groups: the bryophytes,
just two,
the bryophytes and the pteridophytes. Now DNA studies and lots of discussions by taxonomists, they consider them now 7 phyla.
But some people adamantly hold on to 2. That's just 2.
You got your lumpers and your splitters. It's always what it is.
Right.
But anyway, both are considered primitive plants. So what Katie mentioned in the beginning, as they originated millions of years ago. And they can be lumped together as seedless plants. So that's what Katie and I just were like, all right, it's fine. They don't have to be two things. Seedless plants. That's what we're covering.
Yeah. Because it has to be complicated.
But I do love these because I did like discovering, like, they're just so ancient. Like, we're talking.
No, they are ancient.
First plants. Besides algae.
Yes.
First terrestrial plants.
Which is awesome because, like, okay, I will say, I being from Western Pennsylvania, I grew up in land of the ferns. Right. Like, ferns everywhere. We don't have ferns in Texas. Like, I mean, I'm sure we do. But, yeah, but it's not like.
Where
you are. Yeah, it's not like the forest. Like
you go out in the woods and it's a carpet.
Carpet of ferns. Yeah, I do miss that. I really do miss that because that is
you just
want to
lay down and, yeah.
Yeah, just feel fall like asleep.
A woodland nymph.
Or it's like. My fear is like not a fear. It's the same weird feeling of like you're in the woods, middle of nowhere, but you feel like you're being watched. Same thing. I'd be like in the middle of a big fern forest like that, huge trees, and then again, carpet of ferns. I'm like, there could be like tiny gnomes running through here, and no one would ever know.
Yeah.
Like no one would know.
I almost want to say likely.
No. Yeah. We'll just throw that into our Bigfoot, our crypto episode, and the gnomes. Just
and probably there's there. Gnomes.
Running through the ferns.
I love how we're talking about taxonomy, and then Laura says something crazy like, there are probably gnomes. We've just lost all scientific credibility.
There might just be. I mean, listen, people still listen to us after I walked barefoot in my yard for a month and reported back on it to see if grounded. And then try to convince people that trees were alive. And still, we have people that listen to us. So, I mean,
we are trained scientists.
Believe it or not. Like, we are credible. All right. Mosses and ferns. I do really like ferns. A fern is actually one of the tattoos I've almost gotten several times.
Yeah, they're so beautiful.
They are.
And I, whenever I see a good patch of like nice soft moss, I just wish I were the size of a chipmunk and I could just like nestle. Lay down and nestle in. Yeah, it just looks so comfy and it's like kind of mysterious the way its little stalks come up. Like there's something like. It's like something magical.
Tiny,
about
like
it.
A tiny world. Yeah. It is a tiny world. Yes, I think I touch on that a little bit. These like micro habitats they have, but it is really neat. And I think it's more fascinating than what, again, like, I mean, this is, I feel the same about moss and that way I do with lichen.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like
it's
still
an odd
like,
thing that most people don't really take the time to notice or appreciate. But when you do,
it's
so
nuts.
Perfect and small.
Yeah, so insane. Not as much as I love, like, canopy, like, bird's
nest. Your bryophyte stuff.
I mean.
Which I'm kind of going to mention.
Listen, I love me a good bird's nest fern here, so.
Well, since evolution-wise, we start with mosses came first. Why don't you start?
The mosses that came first. All right, so. Even though they're into seven different groups now, moss originally were said, like Laura said earlier, were originally grouped within the bryophytes, which includes the liverworts and the hornworts as well. And I'm not going to be talking about those. I'm just going to focus on mosses because, again.
Which I don't really know anything about hornworts, do I? I don't know. I've seen some, like, once or twice, but not very often.
Maybe it's one of those things that I just need to research more and I'd find it fascinating, but I just don't.
but I just don't.
I just don't.
They're close to moss. That's why they're
close enough
together.
Yeah, all close enough. But anyway, so bryophytes are among the simplest of terrestrial plants. And the word bryophyte means like bryon meaning tree moss and phyton meaning plant. So
the name literally, bryon just means moss?
Bryon. Bryon.
Oh, okay. But do you think that like that's where the name bryon came from?
Just moss man?
Moss man. Oh my gosh. If I knew any Bryans.
We do. The last supervisor we had at the zoo. I'll shoot him a text. Which is funny because I always called him boss man. And so boss man, moss man. So I'll just sneak it in there in a text and I'll be like,
listeners are giving serious eye roll right now.
And I'll just randomly call him moss man.
Apparently Bryon means strong or virtuous. So lame.
I mean, moss is pretty strong, isn't it?
Virtuous. Is it virtuous, Kate?
Is it virtuous? I don't cover that in this episode.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so tree moss plant. But so anyway, like Laura said earlier, moss are among the earliest plants that have started to adapt to live on dry land. And it did evolve from algae.
Yes.
I don't know, though. I didn't see, like, moss fossils.
Dude, don't even, I was just going to say, do not look up the evolutionary family of, like, tree.
Oh, heck no.
Because I made that mistake, and that's where I started spiraling.
Don't make the same mistake Laura did, folks. Don't Google
the tree.
I mean, they do have a lot of fossils. It doesn't, I mean, if you Google moss fossils.
Are there?
Yeah, I mean, no, there are.
There must be.
No, there
although,
are.
I swear, like, if I found moss
I wouldn't have no fossils, idea.
Yeah, I would be like, what is
I'd
this?
I'd be like, oh, that's a pattern. That's weird on a rock. Yeah. Huh, strange.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right, so moss are typically small in size, but they are one of the largest groups of land plants and can be found pretty much throughout the entire world. And almost all different habitats.
Yeah, isn't there even, like, is it in Antarctica? I feel like it might be.
Yeah, in the, like, the warmer parts and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't lichen in Antarctica, too, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, definitely yeah. There's lichen there.
So mosses, they are non-flowering, which produce, like we said, spores, because they're seedless. And they have stems and leaves, but don't have true roots. So, and it goes back to seeing those fossils, because they're dated back to about 450 million years ago.
Wowzer.
Which is nuts because it's so not long. Like, well, and not like that, but it's not like they've just found them in one area. Like they found them in a variety of different habitats.
Right, so it must have been like a covert. Like they've, possibly.
But yeah, like they've survived so much in a different variety of climates and they've still stuck around. So they are pretty hardy species. They're comprised of about 15,000 to 25,000 species, give or take.
Wow. Right yeah. Now, like, current.
Currently. Okay. Currently. Which, I feel
I'm sure
like...
tons of went extinct. Like, when it comes to ferns, like so tons many of are extinct. Gone.
Yeah, which
so
is so sad.
So, can only imagine how many over time there's been.
Just dwindle, yeah. But they occur on every continent. I guess I should just listen to my own self. in every continent and every ecosystem that has enough sunlight. So as long as it has sunlight, moss is going to be there. And then just a general, like within the world of plants, the bryophytes, they are the second most diverse group, exceeded only by angiosperms, which are, of course, the flowering plants.
Guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, moss are very diverse, but I mean, obviously, if you're going to be found on every single continent in a variety of habitats, you're going to have to be, obviously, pretty diverse. So, like I said before, they're flowerless plants that don't have a true vascular system, and therefore, they're unable to draw water and nutrients up from the ground over, like, a long distance.
Gotcha. So, that's why they're so
which
short.
Which is why they stay small. Like, if they don't have a vascular system,
yeah,
to
it's
have
gotta be all, what, all osmosis?
Close. Yeah, it has to be super close. And so, this is one of the biggest reasons why they are distinguished separately. Mm-hmm. From ferns is that because ferns and flowering plants, they do have that vascular system. Moss just don't have it.
Yeah. I just imagine the little, like for anyone who doesn't remember, like their basic science stuff with like osmosis, that's just water molecules inherently cling to one another so they can travel up like against gravity if they cling on to each other. So like water can get up a little bit by itself,
tiny bit.
Like up that moss plant.
Yeah. And they do have rhizoids, which is like fine brown filaments that kind of look like roots that anchor them to the ground, but they just literally are there to anchor them to the ground. They don't
no tubes
pull up. Yeah. No, they don't pull up water at all. And so like, if you've ever ripped up like moss from something, like you'll feel like rip it up.
Yes. Yeah. Like Velcro.
Yeah. No, it does feel like Velcro. I don't recommend people going around and ripping moss.
Right. Please
but,
don't.
But it does feel like Velcro. It's just, but those aren't roots. That is just, those are the rhizoids. It's simply there to anchor it. So they absorb the water and nutrients mainly through their leaves, which are teeny tiny, which are usually only a single cell in thickness, which I did
what?
Not.
I did not know that.
Most of the time, which I'm like, what the
fuck? That's actually, though, a pretty big cell.
Yeah, it's a pretty big, well, I mean, it's a lot of cells in, like, a layer. Yeah. Like a,
okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like a bunch of them layer.
Yeah.
So again, they don't have flowers or fruit. Instead, the seeds, they have spores. So they also, you know, they collect it on with it on the leaves, but then they can also draw the moisture and minerals that they need and everything from rain and water around them because their surface is so absorbent. So it's not only like just the leaves, depending on the moss species, they function like sponges, which is also
okay. Yeah, yeah, like, that makes sense.
Why they're so
squishy?
Yeah, so squishy. Why Laura, if she was, would you say a chipmunk or a squirrel? Yeah, you said chipmunk
or either one, either one,
either one. I could be a squirrel too. It's fine, guys. so they are like sponges. They just soak up all the water using their capillary spaces, and it just sucks up and it holds on.
So they're all sharing water.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, typically it's like one. Plant, you know what I mean? It's like one moss. But,
right. Like, is it one plant or is it lots and lots of plants that all grow together?
I thought it was one.
I have no idea. Like, DNA wise, like, is a patch of moss one plant or is a patch of moss lots of tiny individuals?
So mosses typically form dense green clumps or mats, often in damp or shady locations. The individual plants are usually composed of simple leaves that are generally only one cell thick attached to a stem that may be branched or unbranched and has only a limited role in conducting water and nutrients.
So I think it's a whole bunch of plants, but they act as a unit.
They act as a unit. But does that technically... Again, though, this goes back to what is the definition of a plant?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they are attached. They are. They act as.
Yeah. One. Well, it's kind of like what's that? Is it the Man of War? That's like a whole bunch of little things all together.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
So I guess it could be kind of like that, where it's like one animal, but it's not one animal. It's a whole bunch of little animals.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't think because it's not. Technically separated like that per se. I mean, it's separate entities, but I feel like that would be like pulling a branch off of a tree. You know what I mean? Like, it's still part of the greater whole,
but it couldn't live on its own. Where I feel like if you pluck, yeah. So like I just bought some sphagnum moss for some aquatic tanks, and I feel like I could pluck one, pull it and off, it would be okay.
You probably could,
but I bet if you asked the moss. They would talk about themselves as a collective.
I'm sure they were. We are all one.
Right. Like, it would definitely be like that.
Yeah, because,
I mean, mosses are actually very cultish.
Yeah, right. Don't join a cult. Don't join the moss. Like, I mean, it would have to be.
I mean, they're all obviously sharing water and nutrients.
Yeah.
Like, it just has to be that way.
So it has to be. Yeah, it has to be that way. So
they're functioning like a one, but they are many. We are one, but well, we are many.
And just that's a t-shirt, just a big clump of like moss on his shirt.
No one would get it.
No.
It'd be so funny though.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, yeah, so it is individuals, but they have to be one because I don't think it could survive just one by itself.
I like it.
But just one by itself. Anyway.
Probably every once in a while you get like a pioneering moss. That's like
just one little
starts
one.
A new patch.
I can, you know, do what I mean? It.
Like,
yeah.
Because obviously, like, it'd have to, you know.
It has to branch out. No pun intended.
At some point.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. So mosses, they do play a vital role in development of new ecosystems, which I did not know this. Typically, mosses are among the first plants that would, like, come back onto disturbed sites.
With lichens, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, they and lichen must be friends.
Yeah, right? Like, the troublemakers are like, let's do this. Like, any area that's deforested or affected by forest fires, they stabilize the soil, surface, and retain the water, helping the new plants to grow. Which, again, they're sponges.
Way to go, moss.
Right? Helping everyone out. Also, I found out that moss, I mean, this makes sense. I guess I just never thought about it. But moss can impact the temperature of the soil, both warming it up and cooling it down, depending on the environment that it needs.
Oh,
and
I
what,
never thought about that either.
And what everybody else needs around it. So, if you remember,
blankets.
Right? If you remember, like rhizoids, they play a vital role in being able to bring stuff back and forth to trees.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, and like the underground system or part,
the mycorrhiza,
yeah, part of the underground system, and moss are sort of this, like Laura said, it's almost like a blanket. And again, it's one of those things that, like, without the trees and the mycorrhiza, like, under there with the rhizoids, without all of this stuff layered on top of each other, like, you don't have a healthy forest. So it's like you need all these pieces.
Touching.
Yeah, you need all these pieces and parts, and without one, something is going to suffer.
Well, right. I mean, you just got to take a look at a tree, and you're always going to see moss at the bottom.
Like, there's a reason for it.
Right.
Insulate. I mean, who doesn't want to be under a little blanket? Moss. Oh, right?
Tree roots under blankets.
Right? I mean, that's a cute picture.
It is, little baby trees nestled amongst some moss.
Because, I mean, you figure, too, even in, like, hot places, moss would protect, like, the tree roots. I mean,
yeah.
Typically.
And be holding water.
Yeah.
It's like a.
Yep. So it doesn't dry out. It doesn't get all. Yeah, it doesn't get all dry. So we need mosses within forests because they help so much with the temperature control. Like, it keeps it. If the forest floor, like, needs to stay moist and it needs to stay cool, boom, on it. Need to protect it from the sun, moss is like, gotcha. So it is interesting. But in the Arctic, they actually have the opposite effect on temperature, which they can prevent the warmth of the sun from reaching the ground to reduce the speed at which the ice thaws. So it...
Need some of that.
Yeah, so it's like, it's wherever it is, like, the moss knows what it needs to do, which is crazy because, like, yes, it's slowing down the ice thawing, which keeps everything else alive around it, which everything connects, but it's like that's specifically like the little niche that it holds within the forest.
Yeah.
I got this. Yeah, which is crazy. Like, it knows what its little job is, and it's just like, on it. I got this. You need the ice to stop thawing? On it. You need warmer tree roots? On it. You need to stop it from the sun? Got it. Like, it just knows what it needs to do. So they're important. Obviously, they're important components of any vegetation and region in the world. And, like, pretty much, like I said before, any forest, wetland, mountains, you can find them absolutely anywhere.
So you've got your mosses, and then you've got your fern and fern allies, which I love that term, but that's literally what they're called, fern allies. But they're all, you can lump them together. In the old group, they were called pteridophytes, and people still usually, even though it's not an official grouping anymore, they still talk about them as the group. So the primary characteristics.
Those rebel plant people, I'm not going to change.
The pteridophytes are primitive, just like mosses, in that they produce spores instead of seeds. And that really goes into the life cycle stuff. So I'll mention a few things, and then I'm sure Katie will talk about it more. Yep. But spores are not like seeds. They're just similar. They're like the precursors to seeds. So instead of being like, they're only one cell, single-celled, and they're spread via wind and water. They're, and all plants have what's called alternating generations, but it is a very, very apparent in mosses and ferns. Alternating generations just means that all plants at some point in their life cycle go from having one set of chromosomes to two, just like people.
Yeah.
But it's the same with plants. And so most plants, it's very brief, but ferns and mosses are a little more complicated in that they stay single-celled for much longer. Besides having the spores, like the mosses, what makes them different than moss is the fact that they are vascular. And vascular just means that they have tubes and such that can help them to carry water. The word for vascular plants is tracheophyte, which I thought was cool. Like your trachea, like a tube.
I mean, it makes sense.
But because I guess botanists are elitists, these are considered lower vascular plants rather than just vascular plants. Lower vascular because they're more primitive.
Jeez. Down talking the ferns.
Down talking the ferns. Right. Although they were here first.
Right. You're so offended. And they were here first. Yeah.
So their vascular system allows for the transportation of water and nutrients throughout all the tissues of the fern or other plants. Roots suck up water. Xylem transports water, which I actually saw a truck today drive by, and the company name was Xylem, and it was a water company.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, clever.
Yeah.
Clever.
But,
going to talk about that tonight. So xylem carries water and phloem carries nutrients and sugars. I feel like there's got... The only thing I ever think about with phloem is phlegm.
I know, me too. I can't.
Phlegm is thick, yeah, and sugary.
Yeah.
Like it's, that's phloem carries the sugar.
That's so gross.
I don't know how else to remember it.
I know.
But being vascular gives plants a little bit of extra oomph and allows them to be better terrestrial plants than mosses, because unlike having to just rely on osmosis, they can carry water, which lets them get taller. And being taller and being able to live in environments that aren't as wet, like mosses,
has to be places, yeah, where it's some pretty wet. Yeah, some place, yeah.
Yeah. Ferns still rely on water somewhat, and as Katie might mention, in life cycles, they rely on water for part of their life cycle. Like they're,
I don't talk all that much about, I mean, I talk about, okay, the life cycle, but I don't go super in depth.
Well, you know, just like, so just like frogs and stuff, amphibians.
It all goes back to frogs with you for how much you're like, I don't like, I know, frogs.
I don't, well, how, I, all people goes are back more comfortable to frogs. With frogs than
ferns. People are more comfortable with frogs than ferns.
Well, okay, so
they're just,
you know,
anti-fern.
Like,
you know what? Ferns make me uncomfortable, and I prefer if we don't talk about it.
Actually, okay, then fine. It's actually more like people, because so in mosses and ferns, rather than having reproductive organs, they have they're like a stage where they're just a single chromosome. Mm-hmm. People have the same thing. It's our eggs and our sperm. That's single chromosomes.
Yep.
And just like sperm have a little tail and they need to travel through liquid, it's the exact same for mosses and ferns. Their spore, when it travels, it has to travel via liquid to fertilize anything if it's going to reproduce sexually. So it has to have water at some point in its life cycle. So ferns can get away from the water, but not completely away from the water. So because they can do better on land, it's resulted in their dominance of terrestrial plant life. So there is a huge range of ferns, or I should say they've dominated terrestrial plant life even more so than moss, like of the spores.
Okay.
There's more variety of species apparently, even of ferns, than there are of mosses. I don't know. I feel like you can read very conflicting things, because you were just saying that they're the second largest group.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's bryophytes or if it's the whole group of
scientists don't freaking
depends
know
if you're a lumper or
yeah
a splitter.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to the lumpers and the splitters. It's fine, folks.
So that's the characteristics of a fern, essentially. Like, they're almost identical to mosses except for the vascular thing.
Yeah, which I mean makes sense.
It's a big enough difference.
Yeah, a big enough difference. So then the life cycle, I'll touch on it. Are you done?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. Tell people more about like the spores and the.
Well, I don't go too in depth about it. But so they have a 2-stage life cycle known as the alternation of generations, which which I feel like, I don't know, is.
I definitely remember learning this in botany.
Me too, but I also feel like it's some sort of like an announcement. The alternation of you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's an announcement of some sort. Anyway, so there's 2 stages. Gosh, I'm having botany flashbacks, and it's good.
Well, and it sounds complicated, but like I had said, all plants go through this. It's just more obvious with the plants, the ferns and the mosses.
Yeah. So the first stage is the gametophytes. This is the green part of the moss, for mosses anyway, this is the green part that we see. And then there's the sporophyte, which is formed as a capsule containing the spores and whatever. So the sporophyte generation produces spores that are capable of germinating and then develop into the gametophyte generation that produces the male and female sex organs and ensures sexual reproduction. So,
yeah, and listeners, like,
it literally
Google
just
this.
Comes down
you
to that.
You need to see a picture.
Yes.
Google a picture and it will make so much more sense.
Alternation of generations. Yeah. And it literally is that simple, though. You have the sporophytes, you have the gametophytes, that's it. Like, spores grows, yeah. And so that's pretty much all it does.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and so the flip-flop of the ferns is that, so they also have the gametophyte and the sporophyte, But whereas mosses are mostly the gametophyte, which is the single chromosome stage.
Yes.
Ferns are mostly the sporophyte.
Yep, they're opposite
of
each other.
More like a tree.
Yeah.
Where they spend most of their time as an adult and have double chromosomes.
Laura just air quoted very big for those of you who cannot see. She just... Because you're like very big. You're like... No, like, no, like, no oh, one can see name? You.
Nixon or whatever.
Yeah. No one can see you. No one can see you. Except for me.
You can.
I appreciate your giant air quotes.
You can hear it in my voice.
Yeah. No, you can. You can. I'll give you credit for that one. But yeah, no, that it is completely opposite, which, again, then it goes back to I get why they would have clumped them together, because it is...
Yes.
I feel like that's one of the things that they're like, a scientist or a botanist one day is just like, I mean, it's close enough. And then.
Yeah, or that's how, like, people who weren't botanists, but all the other scientists.
Yeah, well, close like, enough. Close, enough. Close enough. That's close enough. And then, like, some, like, picky, like, just like, no, they're different. And that's whenever we started to get arguments and division. Because that is, I mean, it's, that's close enough. I would be, that's close enough. I mean, I get it why they're different, but still.
Yes. And the fact that either of them spends any significant time as a gametophyte is what makes it even more different than the other plants.
Yes,
the
very much so.
Gametophyte thing, like the other plants are doing that for like a hot second.
Yeah.
Not like a substantial the whole, amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Either their whole life like a moss or at least like a chunk of it as a fern.
Yeah.
I forgot that the ferns, their little gametophyte is in the shape of a heart.
So I'm going to go into, unless Laura, if you had anything else with life cycle, cause I was going to go into moss and the ecosystems and kind of,
nah, you go for it.
All right. So let's just go back to like bryophytes in general. Again, we're lumping for the sake of simplicity here because it's too complex the more we get down. So as I said earlier, they do play an important role in regulating ecosystems, because they play, you know, like a buffer for all plants that live close by and benefit from water nutrients that the moss collects. So again, it's there to help the forest as a whole. It's a collective. Again, everybody helps everybody. Also, again, you have indicator species. And I know we've talked about these before, indicator species like frogs. Mm-hmm. Mosses are also a good indicator species because it does tell you about the quality of the habitat that it's in.
That makes sense.
As many plant species are very sensitive to levels of moisture in the atmosphere, which are lower in disturbed habitats because there's less shade there. And so it's not just the fact that, oh, it's in a sunny area, because you can have a sunny forest.
Right.
It's the fact that if you had like no trees, no nothing, or if it was like a poorly... Like, you think of, like, a park. Like, a lot of the parks in the United States, a lot of the urban parks are, again, go back and listen to our tree episode. But it talks about, like
ecologically
the,
dead zones.
Yes. Yeah. Because they are dead zones because, like, the trees are spaced out, which they shouldn't be. It has, like, the crappy grass that's, like, not native. And so it's all, like, staged. And it, gosh, got to go through and cut out all my coughs. But so it doesn't have that moisture. So like if you think about like your urban parks, just because it is disturbed, I mean, again, you can have a sunny forest, but if it's not disturbed, if that whole community is not built the way it's supposed to, it's not going to hold in a lot of that moisture. And so if it holds in that moisture, boom, moss. That's a really good indicator of a healthy forest. No moss, poor indicator. So they also play a very crucial role because they stabilize the soil and, again, help with water retention, which helps in prevention of floods and even landslides, which I was like, oh, I guess, again, never really thought of
that. But that's what we're relying on is moss. That's all it stands between you
and a landslide. Yeah. It's some moss.
Tiny moss.
Obviously, folks, there's a lot more that goes into it. Yeah. But they do play a role in it. They are also very important within the carbon cycle, with peat mosses storing a huge amount of carbon in both the Arctic. Bogs. Yeah, in the Arctic and the temperate zones, which again, I'm like, oh yeah, it's like all these pieces connecting. Moss are way more important than people give it credit for. So the other very important part that they play within an ecosystem is insects and other fungi. They're constantly used like within the wildlife, such as squirrels do pull it up for lining their nest, or what's a squirrel nest called?
A dray.
Yeah. Birds will use moss to line their nest because it is like a nice, soft, cushiony.
Oh, for substance. Sure. Like, primitive man was doing it.
Right? No, it like, had yeah. to have. Had to have been ripping up yeah. that Velcro moss. And so they will, like, other ecosystems will, or other animals within the ecosystem will rely on that. So because of their range of adaptations that moss have built over the year, they have been able to occupy areas that are otherwise uninhabitable, like on rocky ledges and stuff, as long as it's healthy. And that's the other weird
water.
Yeah. And the yeah, like, but it, I mean, it's still, it's the moisture. It's not so much water. It's moisture, which gotcha. That is, a, that is, yes, yeah, yes. that is a difference. And so,
right. Cause otherwise, how are they surviving in these inhospitable?
Yeah. 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 But it can, because it's the moisture.
It's taking it from the air yep. too.
So there are different species that have adapted to survive in insanely extreme conditions, and some studies have shown that the lowest temperature that they can photosynthesize in is around negative 15 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, negative 15, Celsius, degrees Celsius. So that's okay. still like down into the, what, 20s, yeah. teens?
But I guess if you have no vascular system, that doesn't freeze solid. Like, no, yeah. It wouldn't freeze.
Yeah.
So like... As long as you could still, as long as the molecules inside of you could still move.
Then, yeah, you should be fine. So that's down to 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So negative 15 degrees Celsius, 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So, I mean, that is, which, I mean, you figure we're, you know, in Pennsylvania, there's moss everywhere. And it definitely gets colder than that. It's just average temperature, I guess.
Yeah.
So in hot environments like prairies or deserts, one way that mosses tolerate that heat is by becoming dormant. I did not know that moss went dormant.
I've seen, like, sphagnum moss bogs, like in bogs yeah, where some areas are dry saw at that. All.
So, yeah. obviously, you know, so they'll go ahead and they'll dry themselves out. And they can survive heat much better when they're hydrated, of course. But, you know, if they're well hydrated, then whenever those really bad heat spells come, they'll dry themselves off. But some mosses have even been known to survive temperatures as high as 100 degrees Celsius when dried out, whoa. Which is insanely hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can, you figure, I mean, I don't know, because there's no place on Earth where it gets that hot except for, like, thermal, you know what I mean? Like, so because of, like, you think about the moisture, they are a good indicator species. There are several threats to moss, which mostly habitat loss and habitat degradation, which is
like pollution.
Yeah. Stuff. Pollution. And anytime like you have, brain blank here, erosion, like, and you know, on like the sides of the mountains and stuff that wears along like, river beds and creek beds and things like that, the erosion, certain aspects of modern agriculture, again, same thing, parks, modern urban parks, but the agriculture, overgrazing, undergrazing, and the widespread use of herbicides and fertilizers have definitely posed a huge threat to moss survival, as does clearing trees and things. So basically, again, if you're using a bunch of herbicides and a bunch of fertilizers, unhealthy ecosystem. Again,
yeah.
moss are going to be like, hold up, not good, this isn't good. So again, as mosses, they don't have roots to get their nutrients directly. They get their nutrients directly from the air and rain rather than soil. So they are particularly sensitive to atmospheric pollutions.
I know lichens like that too.
Yeah. Which is why they have become extinct from urban and industrial environments. So again, it's like you need the healthy soil in a way. But it's
not
like,
even just the soil, but the air quality.
It's yeah, it's way more so the air quality than what I ever knew. So it's like, yeah, yes, it's the moisture. It's
I knew lichens were like that, but I didn't know moss was.
Yep, it's the moisture that they need the moisture to show, you know, indicator of a healthy system. But then if there's like pollutants in the air, pollutants in the soil, even though it doesn't suck it up, I mean, it's still going to, you know, kill it and stuff.
Sitting in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But then the air, too. And so it's like, it's way more of an indicator species than what I ever thought that it was. Because it is just really, really sensitive.
Fascinating.
So that's what I have on moss, which, yeah, I thought that was the coolest. But that was my biggest takeaway from, from what I was doing the research, is just how big of it.
And that must be one of the differences. Like, I learned that lichen takes everything from the air. So it's like a radiation sponge, but lichen survives it.
Yes.
And things will eat it and be full of radiation. Whereas it sounds like moss will die.
They just, the canary cuts in out. The
coal mine.
It's like, nope.
Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Yeah.
They have volunteered to be a helper in every niche.
Right? No, it really has. They
cannot handle the,
But in a way, though, I mean, okay, so you figure trees. All right, let's just hear me out on this one, okay? Trees, we already know that they will adapt whenever they see that there's, whenever they sense that there's danger. It's just on tree time. So it's way slower than what anything else, like than what we know, because they're going to out-survive us, outlive us. So moss does help them in the fact that if they start to die out, like, trees can react. And I was, like, looking this up. This was, like, a rabbit hole I started to go down.
It's their canary in a coal mine.
It almost is literally, like, their canary in a coal mine. Yeah. Because then they know and they can start moving resources and stuff. And I'm like, what the fudge? Like,
stop. That's so crazy.
Yeah. And so anyway, so there's not, again, just like so much other research, there's not a
moss are tree minions.
Yeah. There's not a lot of research out there. So people don't go quoting our podcast for your science papers. Because there really isn't just like, there isn't a whole lot of research on like plant systems.
Interactions.
Yeah. Because it is still fairly new. But anyway, I thought that was fascinating. Again,
dude,
if you take a look at, they really are, like, they are helpful. And even though they die off because they see threats, pollutions, everything, that's an indicator to, like, trees that trees will slowly adapt over time. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, especially because, like, moss came first.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like trees, you, like,
they came to scope, like, out the land. I mean, moss are older. They're just wiser. Scoped out the land. Knows what it's doing.
And they were like, listen, we figured this out.
But yeah, we just a long never time figured ago. Out
the water thing.
We haven't grown roots, but I mean, you figure if they did have roots, though, they would probably have been extinct a while ago. And because you figure they suck up everything and they are so tiny that any sort of pollutant, boom, gone.
It's blowing my mind. The implications are more and more. The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what if, like, moss is, like, livestock for trees?
Right.
Or, like, you know, like, all the, like how much? Anyway, okay, before we get done.
Laura's going to have another crisis here.
Crisis, and I got a paper to write. I can't.
Right. Okay. Laura can't have a crisis before she writes a paper.
Okay, so real quick, more fern stuff. So there are 12,000 species of ferns right now, and that's current today fern, not all the extinct species that have come in the past. All can be lumped into two classes. I just want to go through a couple of them because I had no idea. Like, you know, for most of us, a fern is a fern. But there are lots of very specific ferns, which are kind of cool. So the oldest ones are known as Lycopsida. And you and I know these for sure. These are the club mosses. So they're called club moss. But they're not a moss. They're a fern ally.
Of course they're not.
You know,
like, they're called a fern.
These are the things, Katie, that look like tiny little pine trees that grow on the
runners. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fern. Or at least related. So Lycopsida. They are the oldest of all the pteridophytes.
Okay.
So hear this. Back in the day, like, these were the first ones. So right after mosses, then they started getting vascular systems.
They're like, as you know what we need? A vascular system.
Vascular system and height, baby. They went from being, like, a couple inches to 160 feet tall.
That's insane.
A fern, or that little tiny pine tree plant that we see in the woods, 160 feet tall. So,
I don't know,
just
if that's
crazy.
Yeah, that would be. Crazy to just think
of. And to go from, like, 2 inches tall to 160 feet.
Overachievers.
Like, talk about overly compensating.
Yeah. Like, I've been short for millions of years. You know what I'm going to do? Beast this. Watch this. Yeah. I am done. But also, like, what? Okay, this is getting into it. But, like, it can't just go from tiny to up. So, like, what was the up?
Yeah, the progression.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, I mean, millions of years. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So it's the club mosses. There's other ones. There's like three orders. It's the club mosses, the spike moss, and what's called quill warts.
Quill warts?
Yeah, quill warts.
I looked that up.
That all of them have tiny little leaves, kind of like moss leaves, and they're called microphylls. So tiny leaves, microphylls. It's crazy to me that a fern or something as primitive as what we're talking about right? could get to be 160 feet tall.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
That is really tall.
Because again,
it doesn't have a trunk.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say. Remember, it's primitive, no, so woody. It's simplistic.
These are not woody plants. Yeah,
yeah,
there's no
simple.
Wood involved.
That's so unfortunate.
No, none.
They're poor lives. I mean, but I'm divorced and single, so I feel you, ferns.
Same boat.
I feel you, ferns.
Okay, so then the other class. So you've got those, and then you've got the Polypodiopsida.
Okay.
Polypodiopsida. And that's the main group of what we think about as ferns. But they're divided into, you know, subclasses, orders, families, yeah. Yada, yada, yada.
The normal stuff.
This is the main group. This is 10,578 species. So, like, by far the most. I had never heard of some of these, okay? You've got, in all these subclass, all these orders, they've all have common names, thank goodness. Whisk ferns, horsetails, have heard of those.
Yeah, have heard of those.
Tongue ferns, filmy ferns, water ferns, tree ferns, have heard of those.
Yeah.
Giant ferns. All originally, that whole group is called fern allies. Okay.
Interesting.
Like a fern, but not what we think of as a fern.
Fern. Yeah.
The biggest order of those are the Polypodialis, with 80% of species being that. And that's the ferns that we think of.
Huh.
So our ferns are the Polypodialis.
Okay, okay.
And they're all lumped into that group. That's the group that slings their spores. So when they, you can't see my hand gestures either.
No.
People. But
it's great.
When the fern uncurls, it eventually gets mature and the spores get mature and then they dry out and then ping, they fling their spores.
How far? Did you find how far they can shoot spores?
Which tickles.
I was going to say, I saw your cat coming up on you earlier.
Yeah, he's trying to get my attention.
Mom.
No, I didn't.
Okay, you talk and I'm going to look.
Okay, thanks.
Because this is, again, is where my brain is going. That this is one of those from our last episode.
Slinging spores.
How far? If humans adapted something that... So let me just look.
Slinging their spores?
Yes.
That's terrifying. Terrifying.
And they're so... Like, as a female, would you have to...
No.
Would you have to catch it?
No. We would have went extinct, because I wouldn't.
Just, like...
Well, thankfully, what happens here is that they sling their spores and their spores land on the ground and then become those gametophytes, which are completely independent. But yeah, so they're all in that group.
So it does say it's comparative to like a catapult, the mechanism is, which we know that. Okay, but there's two snaps. Basically, the first snap occurs as it would with any elastic material that is pulled back and then released. This happens within a few ten of a microseconds. The second snap is also fast, but slower than the first, occurring in 10 of milliseconds. And that this happens as water flows through the walls of the annulus.
Okay, we're not... Anyway,
I'm going to keep looking. There's got to be. Somebody has to know how far.
How far you sling your spore. Okay. So anyway, ferns in general, they're most common in tropical and subtropical areas, although they have four favorite habitats. Normally, you will find ferns in either moist, shady forests, crevices and rock faces, acid wetlands, including bogs and swamps, and in tropical trees. And that's like Katie's thing, her, you know, epiphytes.
Love me good epiphyte.
So those are the four places you're usually going to find them. Ferns can be anywhere from 2 centimeters tall. Okay, so we're talking moss tiny. All the way to 65 feet tall with your tree ferns. So they're not as tall as they were back in prehistoric times, but they're still pretty hefty. All fern leaves are called fronds. And like I said, some are terrestrial, growing on the ground. Some are epiphytic, which means they grow on another plant. Not necessarily a tree, but at least some other plant. Young ferns are called fiddleheads, as they do look kind of like the head of a fiddle or a violin before they unfurl. And some species are male or female, while others are both male and female.
Huh. Okay, so I do have an answer here. Okay.
Okay.
So it does primarily depend on wind, which...
Right, we said wind or water.
Yeah, it would be terrifying, yeah, again, with humans. So if you figure... If there was no wind, let's just say there's no wind, it can average about 2 to 3 meters.
Six feet.
So if you figure a fern, an average fern nowadays.
Like 3 feet tall.
Yeah, 1 to 3 feet. So let's double that. So 6 foot tall human. So if we had a 6 foot tall human, then they
could 12 feet.
Could do, yeah, 6 meters. 2 to 3 meters. So it'd be 6 meters.
Which is
18 feet. Yeah, which is 18 feet. That's a...
Yeah.
I mean, and it'd be... And then it can go farther if it's in the wind, which would be even...
Well, yeah.
Which would be even more terrifying if it's just like...
No.
Anyway, that is one adaptation that's probably best human did not...
Yes. Again. Yes. So just a few fun fern facts to end the episode. Some ferns can live up to 100 years. No idea they could live so long.
Mm-mm.
Some fiddleheads are edible.
Hmm.
The study of ferns is called pteridology.
That one I did know.
That's with a silent P.
Kind of like pterodactyl.
Yeah.
Pterodology.
In Victorian times, you would have liked Victorian times, Katie, because there was fern fever. It's literally what was called fern fever, where ferns was a motif on everything.
I believe it.
Like dishes, clothes, baby things, like all of it. They were obsessed with ferns.
Sure, hats.
Yeah.
They had all their own fern merch. It just went, people went crazy for the fern.
Fern fever.
Yeah.
Ferns are very prominent in folklore. Some species are evergreen. Some species are used in traditional medicines. There is, for all you listeners who are more fascinated with ferns, there is an American Fern Society. You are absolutely, I'm sure, welcome to join.
I'm sure they would love to have people. Just anyone.
Just anyone. And then last but not least, so Katie talked about the, you know, kind of the roles and purpose of moss. I didn't find a lot of stuff about ferns.
But yeah, what is a fern's purpose, Laura?
I feel terrible. Oh, I feel like I let ferns down.
Jeez, okay.
I feel like I let ferns down. But ferns' purpose for now, nowadays, most of our coal and natural gas comes from ferns. Okay.
And so microhabitats, which is where I come in with the bird's nest epiphytes. Is the microhabitats, as well as shelter and shade.
Plus being edible, used to just traditional medicines, and then the fact that all of our gas and coal come from fossilized ferns. So, you know, Katie and I come from coal country.
Yep.
That's all during the Carboniferous period.
Marcellus Shale.
Marcellus Shale. But yeah, that's pretty much, it was all ferns. That's when ferns ruled the planet and they all died.
Well, if they're 160 feet freaking tall, they would rule. They ruled the planet.
I would love to see some big
Me
ferns.
Too. Like, that would have been freaking awesome.
I mean, I would still like to see a 60 foot fern.
No, right?
Like the tree ferns.
Yeah.
But they don't grow around here. Our biggest ones around here are like the ostrich ferns, which are still pretty tall.
They're still
ferns.
Pretty big.
But
world's tallest fern.
It's some tree fern. And by tree, I mean it looks like a tree. Like it's like a palm. It looks like a palm tree.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about now.
Not one that lives in a tree.
So currently, the tallest fern in the world is a tree fern, Cyathea australis. Of course, it's got to be in Australia.
That's good, Katie. You didn't even hesitate.
Listen, sometimes I just grow a pair and I just go through it with confidence and just everyone's just going to trust that I know what I'm saying. But it grows.
Just grows on a toga and says that Latin.
Right. But they grow to a height of 65 feet, 6 inches, and has fronds up to 9 feet, which is crazy. That's for awesome. A frond.
That's awesome.
Again, I really feel like I need to just make, yeah, of course. Okay, Southern Victoria and Australia, I mean, in the name, New South Wales. Yeah, yeah, it's just huge. I know what these are. I actually have seen these before. Anyway. Yeah, again, ferns are a pretty, they're interesting. I mean, both are interesting. Again, it's like we said earlier, it's like the lichen in that it's something that if you really take the time to stop and look, and I'm telling you, I mean, and you know, my ex-husband, he was kind of interested in this stuff, but I feel sorry for the soul if I find an ex-husband that I'm like, I got to expose someone else to all this knowledge again.
Like, unless they already know it. You should just have them listen to the podcast first.
Be like, listen, before you even first, really get into a relationship. Stipulation number one. This is the real me. Listen
educate
to
educate yourself.
Yeah, educate. Because there will be a quiz later. Thank you very much. Done. How tall did I say a fern was? And done.
65 feet.
What is a lichen? Tell me.
Yeah. As we said, I think even though they're considered primitive, they're not boring.
No, I don't think so.
Once you stop and look, you'll notice them everywhere, and they really are magical. I feel sorry for the soul who doesn't think that they're magical and amazing. Like, if you're not struck by a moss-covered log in the dappled sunlight of a forest.
if that
doesn't touch you.
If that doesn't move you to tears. Just Laura in a forest.
You're missing something in the world.
Listen, did we ever talk in this episode about that video with the trees, the people screaming?
No.
About the deforestation?
Because I totally
forgot about it. Don't think so. There's a video out there somewhere, guys. You just got to Google it. And Laura and I love our forest, but some people are just extreme. And there is a video, I don't even remember what it's called, but I'm sure if you just Google, like, people screaming in a forest, there was a group. And I don't think I've ever laughed so hard because they're just sitting out in the middle of the woods and it's like, why did they have to die? And they're like, because they're cutting companies.
Vocalizing the pain.
Yeah, they're just, because they're so upset about the deforestation. Listen, I'm just as upset about deforestation, more so than the common person, but not as much as these people are, where I would just sit and go scream in the woods. Do I want to recreate this video? Absolutely. Because it would be phenomenal. Because it is really funny. But, yeah. To just go scream in the middle of the woods.
I feel like we'd have to go, like, I was going to say we'd have to find the middle of nowhere.
The really middle of nowhere.
Or, like,
or notify.
We're going to make a video where we're just screaming in the woods.
Because, listen, I am loud.
Everyone's fine.
I am loud. And yeah. I have never had somebody tell me that they can't hear me. And I used to give presentations in senior retirement homes. And I've never had somebody tell me they couldn't hear me. So, again, my voice is going to travel if I'm going to be screaming about upset forests in the woods. God bless our listeners.
Yeah.
To end it, I have a patch that says it has an inhaler on it, and it says it ain't easy being wheezy.
Oh man,
isn't that amazing?
That's awesome. Ain't easy being wheezy.
All right, folks.
Thanks to plants.
Thank you, plants.
Air.
Right?
Yeah.
Very cool. Anyway. Very cool. All right, so this is episode two.
Two.
Man, of the new season.
So we went from ridiculous to heavy science, and hopefully you're still with us. We're kind of going back and forth. Next week should be light science.
Yeah,
we're gonna
talk
about fall because we're basic.
And well, I would say you're in fall. It's still freaking 90 degrees down here in Texas, and it's September. So
yeah, it's been unreasonably hot up here, but the hurricane's about to hit us, so it's gonna cool things down.
I almost say, oh good, but you know.
Well, we do like that cool weather. Yeah. I like cool fall weather.
No, I do too. It's just, yeah, Texas, we will eventually see it. One day it'll cool down below, you know, in the 90s. So Here's hoping. All right, everybody, until next week.
Bye.